Lead singer of The Police. Sting.
Oh. I was lost.
Sorry.
Sting.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Wow, did I not know that Sting was the lead singer of The Police? Don't tell anyone.
Who did you think Sting was?
I knew that Sting was a musician, but I had never pieced together that he was also from The Police. This is something that you know about me.
I do know that about you.
Ashamed of my lack of popular music knowledge.
I'm not here to make fun of you at all.
Yes, you are. It's your sole purpose in life.
I know. That's literally God actually came unto me once and was like, "You're on earth to make fun
God
of this
came
kid.
Onto you once?
Like, yeah, is that not what they say? Unto you. I said unto. I didn't say
okay.
Unto.
Okay, I didn't hear the you. Whoa, Lena. Just a little humble brag.
Yeah, God came onto me. Yeah, just a little humble brag. But the important part is I'm supposed to make fun of you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
God gave me a sacred mission.
Yeah, right after he was like, "Hey, I think you're really beautiful. What's your number?" Yeah,
literally.
And you were like, "God, you already know you're omnipotent." Oh my gosh, this is so crazy.
You don't even have to call me on a phone. You know you can contact me.
You can call me anytime, anywhere.
Oh my God. God, that's so funny.
Like, oh my you, this is so embarrassing.
Oh my you. Listen, that night was crazy. I actually don't like to talk about it very much because it honestly hurts my head, you know. Ian learned about the joke the other day, "How's your head? Haven't had any complaints." And it was the funniest thing I've ever seen him learn about.
And I think I've heard that twice since, so.
Really? Well, good. It's very funny.
Boop, 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 beep, beep.
Are you ready to talk about this episode?
Just starting out this episode a little playfully blasphemous.
Yeah, God doesn't mind. He told me.
He told you when he came on to you. He said, "And here's a free pass to just get, like, you know, 10% blaspheme for your podcast."
Just for your podcast, though. If you say it outside of the podcast. Mm-mm. 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 Don't you?
Only on mic. Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Recovering Gleek, season 4, episode, I don't freaking know, 12 maybe?
Yeah, it's 12.
Naked. Mm-hmm. Featuring, what's that band's name? I was going to make a joke about the songwriter and then I realized that I don't know who sings his songs with him. So scratch that
Sting?
Joke. Yes, Sting. No.
The Police?
Naked, featuring Mae Mueller and Polo G. My name is Ian Allred, and I'm a Gleek.
Oh. I don't even know what joke you were trying to make.
It's a song. Naked is like the name of a song, right? It's like
a song by the Spice Girls.
True, but no, it's like a David Guetta scenario where he writes songs and then he has other artists come in and sing them. And he has a big song out right now called Better Days, which is Mae Mueller and Polo G are singing it, but it's written by Naked. It's a very good song, frankly.
Okay, I'll check it out.
So who's teaching who about music now, Lena?
Literally, I was just going to say my pop culture blind spot is right the fuck now. Ian is my teacher, and my name is Lena Knatzer, and I'm a Gleek. Hey, what's up? How are you?
I'm, like, kind of anxious.
Really? Oh, I hear
you. We're good. We're
here. Do you
want
to do some breathing exercises before we start?
Sure. Frankly, I was doing stretches before we started. I'm not anxious about anything that has to do with this podcast.
For sure.
But I was like, I should be in a non-anxious place to, you know, like, do some goose and gabs. So I was doing stretches before we started.
I love that. I've told you my favorite anxiety trick, right?
Is it ice?
Yeah.
Ice baby.
A bag of ice to your chest.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, it brings me back immediately. Sometimes I forget about it. And then I'm like, why did I forget about this? I only remember it when I'm not anxious. I swear to God.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm okay.
Good, good.
I'm getting through it. I woke up with a sore throat. I took a COVID test. Don't have COVID. But yeah, that really was not the thing I wanted to do. I've been practicing for, the musical I'm doing soon. And I like couldn't even sing the songs today. I was like, what the junk is this about? This better get away from me fast. But I'm good. Other than that.
Good. Good, 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 good.
Okay. Are you ready to hear some glacks?
I have been ready to hear some glacks since the day I was born, baby.
Yep. I'm sure. Well, God told me. Because he's omnipotent.
Oh, yeah. It's time for the glacks.
So, Naked is the 12th episode, just like Ian said earlier, of Glee's fourth season and the 78th episode overall. It premiered January 31st, 2013. This episode was directed by Ian Brennan and was written by... Do you know who it was written by? Can you?
No.
It was one of the three. Do you want to guess?
I feel like it would be Ian if he directed it, but I could be wrong.
It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't.
Was it Ryan?
It was.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That explains the like mild body shaming that happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me tell you about the songs. So we have Torn by Edna Swap, but the Natalie Imbruglia version. Imbruglia version? I think that's her name.
I didn't know that she didn't write that song.
I didn't know either. I thought that was like her song.
What? There's another version?
I know.
Wait, what's the original artist's name?
Edna Swap. Like Edna Mode, but Edna Swap. S-W-A-P. Are you listening to it?
I'm going to, just to hear how it's different. I've literally only heard Natalie's version.
Well, I want to do it too.
This version is fun.
Is it? Oh, I'm excited.
Also, this song is so good.
This song is amazing.
Okay. So, went down a rabbit hole with that. Edna Swap is not even the original singer of this song.
What? Who is?
I think she's the original singer in... Well, Edna Swap is also the name of the band.
Yeah.
I think they might be the first singer in English, but Torn, this is all from me, like truly just, I just stumbled on this information, was originally written in Danish.
Mm.
It was recorded in 1993 in Danish. It was called, we're going to do our best to pronounce this. I'm sorry to our Danish listeners, Brandt, something like that, which means burnt. And then Edna Swap released this cover in English in 94. And then the Natalie Imbruglia version came out in 97.
Cool.
And this took over rocks. The world.
I can't. I'm going to listen to the Danish version too, because I really like this Edna Swap version as well. Well, hear me out. I also like the Rachel Berry version.
Oh, yeah.
Truly.
Let me tell you just a little bit about this song. So, Natalie Imbruglia actually said in an interview with Too Fab that she is, quote unquote, flattered that they chose to do a cover of her music. And then she said, Leah has an amazing voice and it is very versatile. I think she could be successful in the career that she wants. So, great. Awesome.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thanks, Nat.
This is our second duet with oneself on Glee so far. They're counting La Jazz Hot with a Kurt and duet. I don't know that counts, but I thought it was funny. and in the Bushwick scene sequence when she's like in her apartment, the new Rachel is seen wearing the clothes that she's wearing for her season five promo pick. Interesting. Rachel Berry, you are an outfit repeater. And then we have Centerfold / Hot in Here by the J. Gillis Band / Nelly, respectively. Neo actually commented on Twitter that he watched Glee's version and thought that the cover was nice. So that's super great. Wait, that's for Let Me Love You. That was, I fully did not label that.
I was like, was Neo the lead singer of one of those bands? I know nothing about music. I was shocked.
No, that was just my next Glact on the list, and I fully didn't label it. So I don't have any Glacts for you, but I do have a fun fact that if you ever go to a party with me and this song plays, my party trick is knowing all of the words.
Oh, heck yeah.
And it's very, I don't know, it's very fun. I love this song.
I have a question for you.
What's your question?
Did you, because this song was very big when we were like early elementary school age.
Oh yeah.
Did you have a trend in your elementary school where some kids would like try and make it more G-rated and change the lyrics, or was that just me?
Well, we did that with like every song ever. I don't remember this one, but there are songs that are like from my childhood that I will like still sing there are Taylor Swift songs that I have like changed to be more G-rated in my head, and I still can't like get it out of my head. So I don't remember. What did you do with this song?
Oh, shoot. The Zuni Elementary cover of Hot in Here for like... You know, there were plenty of kids who didn't care, but for those of us who were like so straight-laced as 7-year-olds that we were scandalized by this song, there were two versions. There was either It's Getting Hot in Here, So Take Off All Your Socks.
Oh,
I am
no.
getting so hot, I'm gonna take my socks off.
Ew, I hate that.
Or there was a very creative, the inverse, It's Getting Cold in Here, So Put On All Your Clothes.
That is so funny. It's getting hot in here, so take off all your socks.
Yeah.
That's so stupid. Shoot. I'm obsessed. That's really funny. The next song we have is A Thousand Years by Christina Perry. And this is the version featuring Broadway's own Steve Kazee. Do you know who Steve Kazee is?
I do not.
He played Guy in Once. Oh my God, I love Steve Kazee. Holy moly. Do I have any Glacks with the song? No. And then we have Let Me Love You, open parentheses, Until You Learn to Love Yourself, close parentheses.
Oh my gosh, I have a Glacked about this number.
What?
It's that Neil heard.
No!
He said it was, quote, nice. Can you believe?
Not, quote, nice. That's so nice.
Thank you, Neo.
I think I got confused with Nelly and Neo.
Yeah.
You know me. Names are hard. Sorry. Thanks for that, Glock. That's so informative and awesome.
You're welcome.
Another fun thing about this song that I don't know if you know, but this song peaked at number 6 on the charts. And it was the only song of season 4 to reach the iTunes top 10.
Shoot. I'm frankly shocked
that this song reached
the top 10, but good for you, Jacob Artist.
Like, even in this episode, like, Jacob Artist, I'm a fan. I'm certainly a fan, but... There are songs in this episode I would faster stream.
Yeah.
But.
There are songs in this episode that are on my Glee playlist, and they are not Let Me Love You.
Yeah. Yeah. Love you, Jacob Artist. And then we have Love Song by Sarah Bareilles, performed by Quinn, Rachel, and Santana. And then we have This New Year by A Great Big World, performed by The New Directions. Let me tell you about the just regular Glacks. Not Glacks about songs, just regular. So. Well, just kidding. This is about, oh my God, literally, I need to start labeling my stuff better. I know what I'm doing. So, let me tell you about Glacks about This New Year by A Great Big World, okay? We're backing it up.
Great.
So, this song was actually used in the opening number of the film New Year's Eve, which stars, I don't know if you know, Glee cast member Lea Michele.
I genuinely did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I've seen this movie, but you didn't know she was in New Year's Eve?
No.
Really? I remember I saw it specifically for her.
All those movies blend together. I thought Taylor Swift was in that one, but now that I'm thinking about it, she's in Valentine's Day. With Taylor Lautner.
Mm-hmm.
Drama.
It's huge
Back
drama.
To December, baby.
This is me swallowing my pride, standing in front of you, saying I'm sorry for that. I think there is an interview with Lea Michele where she like confronts Jacob from Twilight. And I think it might be for this movie.
It's for Scream Queen season 2. Hate to tell you.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. Yes. But she's like, didn't Taylor Swift write a song about you? And I was like, you're such a bitch. A Great Big World. Wow. Everyone is really loves to, in this episode, like all of the artists are like tweeting Glee, which I don't know. Maybe that was like a trend, like of things like expected to do at a certain point because Glee was so popular that like, you know, Neo says thanks or the Great Big World says thanks. I don't know.
I wonder if it was the opposite, that Glee was so on the downslide that they were like, like, we will use your song if you give us a shout out when the episode airs.
Wow. Interesting. While A Great Big World gave Glee a shout out, they tweeted to Ryan that they loved this version, adding that it captured the spirit of the song. They also posted a reaction video to the song on YouTube. So thanks, A Great Big World. You were really helping us when we were on the down and down. this is the 6th group number in the show with all black and white outfits. Whoa, super fun, super exciting, super awesome. Do you want to hear what the other songs were? I'll tell you.
Is one of them Hello, Goodbye?
Yeah.
That's the only one I can think of.
So the first one is Keep Holding On, and then Hello, Goodbye, and then Toxic. And then the fourth is One of Us. And then the fifth is Fix You. Doo-doo. So there are two versions of this performance that exist online. One was just posted by Ryan Murphy on his YouTube channel. And the other that's shown in the episode. The first one is in full color, and the second one is in a grayish tone. So, super fun, super awesome. This one, you might be wondering, why does this song look like this? And it's because it's paying homage to the official music video of this song. That is something that Glee has done many a time. They did it with Vogue and Scream and It's Not Right But It's Okay and Nasty/Rhythm Nation and Take On Me. So those are the songs in this episode. So Ryan Murphy stated on Twitter that the Men in McKinley calendar storyline has been an idea that he's had since season 1 and he was super, super, super excited to do it. Darren Criss is really uncomfortable, like looking at all of the pictures that he was in the Men of McKinley calendar. And he says he specifically can't look at them because they were all photoshopped to make him look more muscular and toned than he is in reality. So yeah, I don't know. I appreciated hearing that. I mean, I appreciate when people are like pretty upfront about like photoshopping stuff. So mm-hmm. I appreciated Darren Criss like owning up to that, like because I don't know, like you know, these are normal people. It's okay; their bodies can look the way they look, you know.
I also don't think he was told they would be photoshopped.
Yeah, that really, honestly, I have like in the past gotten photos back from people who have like taken my picture and like seen like the drastic photoshopping done, and but frankly been very offended. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what was wrong with my body the way it was in the first place? So if that's the case, that really sucks. I would really not like that either. So the rumor of Sue posing for Penthouse and taking horse estrogen was previously mentioned on a voiceover by Will and an extended version of the pilot. This marks the first appearance of Britney's internet talk show Fondue for Two since its appearance in season 2 in the episode Rumors. This is literally the first time
that this it's is the been, second time we've ever seen it.
Yeah, the first time since 2002 since season 2. Isn't that interesting?
That is wild.
I know, and I feel like maybe I just think about it so often that like that can't be the case. Is that the case? Well, that's what the sacred text says. So. And Daddy Wikipedia is omnipotent.
That is so wild to me. Anyways, I guess it was just incredibly memorable in Rumors.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? And I know that you and I have talked about it a lot just because of like the scandal that surrounds fondue for two as like a concept and a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The scandal being Ryan Murphy outright stole the idea from a young person who wrote a letter to Corey Monteith. So, yeah.
I mean, like, it also does come back later. So it is in the show more. But I feel like I could have, before we started doing this podcast, if you had been like, what's the Fondue for Two theme song? I feel like I could have sung it for you.
Yeah.
And I literally, before we started this podcast, had watched Rumors one time and watched this episode one time and had not seen any of the future episodes that it appears in.
Right. Absolutely.
Wild.
It's iconic. It's iconic. It really is. So Sam and all of the McKinley High Glee Club boys do broga in this episode, and Glee Wiki wants us to know that it actually exists. It fully sent me to the broga, brogayoga.com, the website for broga. So yeah, I don't know what its whole thing is, but hell yeah. You know,
sure.
I don't. And then, so the, when the episode aired in Australia, the line when Sam says he, says something about he wants to sell his semen again, he's like, I'll sell my semen again to make, more money. That was cut from the episode in Australia. They said, that is too naughty for us. And then
they said, it's getting hot in here, so take off all your socks.
Take off all your socks.
Uh-uh.
my final lock for you is this episode got a 2.1 rating with a total of 5.48 million viewers. Those are your glocks.
Incredible. Thanks. What amazing glocks. Ew.
No, that was literally soups. Whoa. Gross. Why did you do that? Sorry, I didn't mean to moan like that.
I hated that.
Ooh, fun.
All right.
Do you want a recap for us?
I do. Let's recap this episode. Oh, I have to do a song.
I never remember to do the song, but you always remember. So
let's see. I've already sung Hot in Here too many times. We can't do that. I'm not going to give you a recap.
So good.
Because you ask for it. Because you need one.
No, I need
you
one.
You see, I'm not going to give you a recap. Because you tell me it's make a break in this. Oh, but I actually am going to give you a recap.
Oh, thanks.
So
no,
that was
it.
All a lie.
Thanks.
Here's what you missed on Glee. The Glee Club decides to sell a shirtless Men of McKinley calendar to raise money for regionals. Artie feels uncomfortable posing, while Sam overcompensates for his bad SAT scores by over-identifying with his physique. Jake and Marley struggle to say I love you to each other. In New York, Rachel is unsure about filming a topless scene for a student film. Kurt calls in Quinn and Santana to intervene, helping Rachel realize that she's not ready to be naked on film. And that's what you missed on Glee!
How did you feel about this episode? How did you feel about the episode Naked?
Okay, so apparently this is a hot take according to our Discord.
Oh.
I like this episode.
I like this episode too. What don't people like about it? Tell me.
Okay, here's like a very valid thing.
Okay.
That people have stated in the annals of the Discord in the past is, you know, this episode is like making all of the male actors of this show take their shirts off and then just like commenting on their bodies for 45 minutes. And, you know, Darren Criss has openly spoken about how he can't look at the pictures and they make him uncomfortable and how they were photoshopped without his like say so. And so all of that is very valid. And, you know, I think it is ironic that it's an episode that like empowers Rachel for owning up to the fact that she's not ready to be topless on camera while telling all of these boys you have to be topless on camera for this episode. So I get all of that. But the episode itself, outside of the like behind the scenes context, I like a lot of it. So
I agree. And I think obviously, you know, it's we shouldn't look at the episode without looking at it through that lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially as with a cast member speaking out against, like, you know, his experience doing it. So that absolutely sucks. And I think that criticism is super valid. And honestly, I think like the conversation around like body image for young men is like, you know, not a conversation that I think is had enough. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think even this episode, while it tries to have that conversation, it's still not, you know, up to, you know, some sort of standard. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. I'm thinking, because it is like, you know, it is a weird thing where the idea of selling a calendar for a fundraiser with a bunch of shirtless teenage boys.
Yeah.
That is like something to raise your eyebrows at. But also, I hate to tell you, that crap happened at my high school all the time.
Yeah, mine too. Like, mine too.
That fully happened at my high school all the time. And, you know, the Glee has the storyline of Artie and how Artie is not comfortable with it. And that storyline resolves by Sam, who is like the most about his body and most about the way he looks, being like, you know what? I want Artie to feel comfortable. So like, I'm going to wear a shirt in these pictures so that he doesn't feel like the odd one out. And like, sure, is that a perfect resolution? Probably not.
Yeah.
But I also like stuff about it.
Yeah, definitely. Frankly, I mean, I saw Sam like deciding to wear more clothes, not as much as a like specifically for Artie thing, but also for like, you know, him and his like control, you know, like he was told he was only his body and he's so much more than that. And him like owning up to that and being like, I'm worthy of being in this calendar no matter what I wear. And like, this isn't healthy for me right now. So I'm gonna wear a shirt. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I took that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like a lot of this episode. And I think, you know, the conversation around being naked emotionally and physically is like a complicated one. And like, I like the conversations that are had. And I think I ultimately agree with what the episode is saying. It sucks that behind the scenes, they're not living up to what the episode is even saying. But I like this episode. There was a part where I was like getting very, very emotional. I like sobbed a lot in this episode. So let's talk about it. How do you want to break it down?
I think, obviously, as always, New York is its own thing.
Yeah.
In
its
McKinley,
own thing.
Its own thing. In McKinley, I think there is the Jake and Marley stuff, and then there's the calendar stuff.
Yes.
And like everything that is in Jake and Marley falls under calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about first?
I got a lot to say about calendar. I got a lot to say about New York. Frankly, I have almost nothing to say about Jake and Marley.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about them first. I think I do. I don't have a lot to say about them either. I love that, like, in this, like, conversation about being naked, they're like, what about being emotionally naked? Let's throw something in there as well. Let's, like, spice it up and make, I don't know, Jake and Marley have a struggle telling each other they love each other. I thought
I do love this dumb line that Ryder says to Jake. Where he says, chicks dig hot guys who will get naked for a calendar, but what they're really looking for is a guy who'll get naked emotionally.
Hell yeah. I thought that was so funny.
Heck yeah, baby.
All right, let's talk about it. So it starts with, you know, Marley. And she goes on fondue for two. That's how this starts. Oh my gosh.
Thank goodness continued upperclassmen, lowerclassmen interaction.
Literally, when Brittany asked Marley to hang out, I said, this is the best day of my whole life. I love this.
Honestly, hear me out. I think, because Glee has just come back from their winter hiatus with the last episode, Sadie Hawkins. And, you know, their numbers are slip sliding. And they've been slip sliding. I feel like, and we're only two episodes in, so maybe I'll change my mind about this as we go further. But I feel like the writers, you know, went on that hiatus and saw how much the numbers were slipping and then like actually really listen to people being like, why are we only focusing on the newbies and ignoring the established characters? Why do the newbies and established characters never interact? Because suddenly these last two episodes, like, yes, there have been Jake and Marley plots and they're still very important to the show, but they're not the centerpiece. Now the Glee Club is the centerpiece.
Would you call it the centerfold?
That now they're not Angel is the centerfold. The Glee Club is the centerfold. Mm-hmm. And we are getting much more balanced edits of like Sam content and Blaine content along with Marley and Jake content. And we're getting like interactions between the twos and like we're hearing from Tina more. It feels like they were given the note, hey, you need to focus on more of this club than just Marley, Jake, and Ryder. And while we're still getting some focus on Marley, Jake, and Ryder, we're hearing a lot more from everyone else, and I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
All that to say, I like the fact that Brittany is a part of the Jake and Marley plot instead of them like being in their own TV show.
No, I completely agree. Like I think that's when I like this show. You know, when the plot's kind of, you know, what am I saying? But, you know, this is an ensemble show. They would absolutely hang out. Brittany would absolutely, no doubt, bring Marley over to her house and ask her inquisitive questions and make her uncomfortable. That I love it. I'm very excited about it. Yeah. What else happens in this? Oh, my gosh, they sing a song. You're better at steering. You steer.
Okay. The problem is I have almost nothing to say about this plotline. No, really. Brittany talks to Marley on Fondue for Two about how she knows that Marley's in love with Jake, and Marley gets all like, oh, and like, what? Clearly she is. Mm-hmm. And then we just have a million close calls of them almost saying I love you to each other.
Yeah, really, really blue balls on us.
Yeah, they sing A Thousand Years, and then Marley's like, I love this song. And then Jake sings Let Me Love You, and he has some other thing where it ends, and they're like, who is that dedicated to? And he says, Marley. And Brittany's like, why was it dedicated to Marley? And he's like, because I think she's really cool. And they just like refuse to say I love you to each other the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then at the end...
That is such a teenage thing to do, is to see your friends who are dating and really pressure them into like, you know, kissing or like telling each other that they love each other. My God, teenagers are so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, it's sometimes also an adult friend thing to do.
Yeah. Well, heck.
That was not shade on you, by the way, if you interpreted it that way.
Oh, no, no. Oh, I didn't. I was trying to rack my brain if like I have ever done that. Did it look like I was like, well.
Oh, no. You've had a roommate in the past who loved to meddle and play matchmaker and then just put her finger into everyone's relationships and see what was going on. And I love her dearly, but shoot, she is big time the person who would be like, so are you two in love with each other?
Oh,
and you're
no,
like,
she would.
We've been dating for 2 weeks.
Ooh, yeah, she would. She was so awesome. Yeah.
I love her to death, but she did that crap all the time.
I know.
All the time.
I love her. Oh, my gosh. She's got an inquisitive mind. Should we say, did we like the songs? You're like
notes.
Speeding through. Tell me your notes.
These are my notes. My notes for 1,000, which I want to say Jacob Artist and Melissa Benoist are so talented, everyone. Do not misconstrue that. My note for 1,000 years is I fully tuned out. Oops. My note for Let Me Love You is I am so deeply uninvested. And then LOL at Kitty rolling her eyes. I don't care about Jarlie. I hate to tell you, I don't. They're
you don't
not
care about
exciting
romance.
To me.
You won't read fan fiction that is cute. This song, A Thousand Years, that's the most beautiful song that's ever been a song.
No, it is beautiful.
It's going to play at every wedding from now until the end of time.
I mean, it wrapped. What was it? Was it Breaking Dawn that this was in? Was it Eclipse? It was in one
Breaking
of those movies.
Dawn.
Shoot. What are your thoughts on these songs?
Well,
I'm not the target audience for this plotline.
I thought they were super sweet. I thought they were really, I mean, what else can you say about it? I don't have a ton of thoughts other than they were really sweet. So maybe I'm like giving you a tough time for nothing. But I thought they were really sweet. And I think these songs are, I don't like the song Let Me Love You as like a rule, but I think it's a sweet rendition of it. And A Thousand Years, you already know, that song is amazing. So
yeah, that song
rocks. I thought it was a sweet choice for them too. And a choice that aligns with their values being streams on iTunes.
Yes.
Yeah, but yes. Totally.
Shoot.
So yeah, those are my thoughts on that. I think this plot line is sweet. And I, you know, it definitely a lot, like it definitely is like being emotionally naked is so hard. And mm-hmm. I think it's a sweet plot line. And I like these two. I think they're sweet.
My one big note for this plot line is the scene after Ryder tells Jake that he has to get naked emotionally from Marley and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it transitions into Jake and Ryder having a flex off to see who's more muscular. Is the gayest thing that has ever been on Glee. It's like, you're telling me these two are just friends? Sure. No way.
That was homoerotic.
Sure. Oh my gosh.
That is so funny. That's true. What else happens in this plot?
That's like mostly it. I actually really do love the way it wraps up, which is the Meta McKinley calendar is released, yada, yada, yada. And the men are like at a table signing people's calendars, like all of these girls who bought it. And then Marley goes up to Jake and he writes on hers, "I love you, Jake." And then she looks at it and gets really excited and then goes, "I love you back."
So sweet.
And that moment is genuinely very, very sweet.
Yeah. So sweet. If you can't say it, write it on the calendar that you're posing naked in.
I've said that for years.
I know. You say that literally all the time.
My go-to relationship advice.
I know. Say it in your own way. You say it, not me. Oh, I'm saying now you say it. I said that in a weird way, though. I know.
If you can't say I love you, then write it on the calendar that you post naked for.
On the Halloween one.
Yeah, on the Halloween month specifically.
Okay, that's my favorite part.
A Jake O'Lantern is covering your naughty bits.
You said that all the time. Sorry I said that so weird. My head forgot to...
Oh, no. I think you were pretty clear. I just got lost.
Awesome. Well, that's that plot. Do you want to move on?
Yes. Should we do calendar since we're already in McKinley?
Yeah,
okay, totally. Great. First off, just the cold open of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we found out last episode that the Warblers were using performance enhancing drugs. So they cheated at sectional so they get disqualified.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow the New Directions are going to regionals, which, as we said last week, doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make any damn sense.
Because they were also disqualified. So by default, the Mennonites should be going. But oh, well.
Yeah.
But the opening to this episode is so funny to me. It is a Lima, Ohio news report about the Warblers using performance-enhancing drugs, and it is played so straight, so serious. Hunter is coming out of Dalton. All of these reporters are asking him about, like, why he cheated. If he has any comments on it, someone says, "What about the report that you look way too old to be in high school?" Which is also very funny. And then it cuts to Rod and Andrea reporting on it.
Our faves.
Andrea fully quits her job because she is like, this is what counts as news these days. I went to school for this, and walks out and quits. That
so
scene
funny.
Is so funny.
I know. That was so funny. It makes no damn sense that these kids are going to regionals, and it makes me mad. And that they got the choir room just back. Like, Sue just gave it up.
What happened to Sue de Soleil?
Yeah, seriously. Did they like what happened there?
They could have at least just given us a line of dialogue about Sue being like, Sue mentioning that she's bitter because Figgins forced her to give the choir room back now that they're going to regionals.
Totally. It's not like she's not in this episode and doesn't have anything to be mad about. You know what I mean? Like, she mm-hmm. can say a line of dialogue. Who wrote this? Ryan Murphy.
It is never addressed, and it irritates me because I loved the Cirque du Soleil.
I know.
Like, background plot. It was so, so funny.
I know. So funny.
Shoot.
And it makes no damn sense that all this is happening.
Yeah.
They did have a conversation. I thought it was funny. They referenced Twilight in this episode as well mm-hmm. as doing the 1,000 Years. And they called it, Kitty called it poop on paper. And I'm just here to say, fuck you, Kitty. Fuck you, Kitty. Twilight is amazing. Stephanie Meyer is the voice of a generation. Just kidding. Made me laugh. It made me laugh. And then that scene cuts to the scene with Principal Figgins, where Principal Figgins tells Sam and Brittany that they've both respectively, that they've both received the worst grade and the best grade at the school, which makes me so. The SATs. Thanks so much. I forgot that part of information. This whole entire plot kind of makes me mad that like everyone is like knows about the test score that Sam got. Like, you know, even Blaine is like, we all heard you bombed the SAT. And it's like, who the fuck is telling you? Like, right here, right now, I'll tell you here and now. I like did not get a great score on my ACT. I took the ACT and then I had to take it like a couple. I ended up taking the ACT like 4 times to get the score that I wanted. Which there's no shame in that at all. I like studied really hard, but I didn't tell a fucking soul in my school. I was just like, I didn't tell anyone what score I got because it was like, you know, a source of shame for me mm-hmm. about like, you know, my low score. So the fact that everyone is like, not only like, Brittany is in the meeting for this, like, God, why? And like Blaine knows and everyone is like spreading that around. That shit makes me mad. I know this is a TV show, but what the fuck? FERPA, you guys.
Anyway. Figgins said it over the loudspeaker. He announced it in the morning announcements. Yeah, told I'm everyone.
Sure. He told everyone.
Shoot.
Shoot.
I, from a character standpoint for Sam, I like this plot fine. You know, Cordova Street has long been the guy they go to if they need a shirtless scene ever since he was introduced on this show. And I like this plot line of Sam feels like his only value is being in good shape and like being mm-hmm. quote unquote hot. And now that he has done such a bad job on the SAT, that has just, validated that like concern he has.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him kind of just turning into a douchebag about it, that he totally. It gets so about himself and how hot he looks that he ends up like being a jerk to other people. And that the solution isn't like, let's put Sam in his place. It's Blaine being like, okay, I can see that you being a jerk right now is clearly coming from a place of insecurity.
Yeah.
So I'm going to help you see that, like, yes, you are attractive, but you have so much more going on than just that one thing about yourself.
Absolutely. I really like this plot line. And I think, you know, even like, issues with your body that stem from like, you know, be like your only value is your body is also mm-hmm. like a really valid conversation and a really worthy conversation. And I feel like, you know, sometimes that kind of stuff is like brushed under the rug. And I like this conversation. And I like that like Sam is exhibiting like behavior that is like super not healthy. And he like, you know, and a friend goes to him and is like, we still love you. You still have value no matter what your body does. Like, I think that I really like that. And I'm glad that that was on TV. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I love the scene at the end when Blaine shows Sam the video because they're like going to try and get Sam to apply to all of these colleges. And Sam's like, I don't know what I would even write an essay about. And so Blaine shows him a video of all of his friends talking about amazing stuff that he's done. Mm-hmm. That video is so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Also, very in character that, you know, like Santana had something to say about Sam. Mercedes mm-hmm. had something to say about Sam. Rachel could not have cared less. She didn't say anything.
Where's Rachel? Rachel doesn't know Sam at all.
She said, these lips are sealed. I don't care.
I know. That's the scene that made me really emotional. I think, you know, it's such a relatable struggle to, like, you know, have something not work out for you and for you to forget everything you've accomplished in the whole world. You know what I mean? And sometimes, like, like a friend or a group of friends being like, oh my God, let's take stock of all that you've accomplished. Like, let's remember all the value that you add to our lives and to other people's lives. Like, when they mentioned that he, like, took care of his family when they were, you know, when they were unhoused, like, that's so amazing. And I thought, I love that scene. I love that scene so much.
And it also kind of reflects Sam as a character, because I feel like Sam, his whole role on this show has been like, oh, well, Cordova Street's hot. And he will just be the boyfriend of whatever actress has nothing to do right now. And yeah, so, like,
absolutely,
he was Quinn's love interest, and then he was Santana's love interest, and then he was Mercedes' love interest. And, like, his whole thing has just been that some girl in the club is into him.
Yeah.
And so for the show itself to kind of recognize, like, oh no, there's a lot more going on with this Sam character than just, like, him being hot, which is basically the main thing we focused on for the two seasons he's been on this show. I like that.
I like that too. I agree. And I like to, you know, him and Blaine and him go to the guidance counselor. They go see Jamie Mays, what's her face, Emma Pillsbury. And she's like, you know what? Like, there are here is a stack of colleges that know that, like, sometimes, you know, test scores aren't going to be the thing that, like, measures your intelligence, and that's okay. And I love that conversation. And I think I was really excited to see that. And I just love Sam as a character. So I really liked that too. So sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also got in this, the, like, subplot of the Finn and Sue rivalry, which I'm not going to deny has some banger jokes that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
I do feel like this whole plot line is a big nothing burger.
Totally. I was confused, so I stopped paying attention. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know what is gained in this plot line. I don't know, like, what arc is present. It just feels like the writers realized they hadn't really utilized Jane Lynch much this season. Mm-hmm. So they just gave her a bunch of funny jokes. And she has some funny jokes in this plot line.
No, totally.
But what was the point?
For what? Absolutely.
So I didn't even mention it in the recap because it's so nothing. So this plot line is Sue is
angry.
And
it amounts to nothing, too.
It's dumb. So
we don't even see her centerfold. I thought we were going to see her whole vagina on this show.
Sue is angry at Finn because he is doing the Men of McKinley calendar to raise money for regionals. And she's like, you have desecrated McKinley by introducing pornography on McKinley. And then Finn's like, well, I heard a rumor that you did pornography. You had a centerfold spread in what magazine is it? Penthouse?
Penthouse, yeah.
Yeah, in Penthouse, like back in the 80s. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then later, Finn comes with a sealed manila envelope and he's like, I found it. And Sue says, well, it doesn't matter. I'm not ashamed of this, blah, blah, blah. And then she opens it and it's not the Penthouse magazine. And Finn's like, gotcha. I recorded you confessing that you posed for Penthouse. But from the beginning of the episode, she kind of was openly admitting that that was probably true anyways. So, like, why was him recording her saying that such a gotcha moment?
Yeah. I don't know. The whole thing was really confusing to me. And I was like, is she going to lose her job if they find out about this? Like, is she just going to be embarrassed about it? Like, what's going on? I'm confused. And you're right. She was, like, pretty open about it.
Yeah. When he first brings it up, she doesn't say, like, yes, I did that. But yeah, she says, like, I don't know what you're talking about. But if that was true, yada, 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 making it pretty clear that it is true and she will talk about it. And also,
I don't know. It was weird.
The whole gotcha moment is supposed to be Finn. At least this is how I interpreted it. Finn telling Sue, see, you're a hypocrite. Like, you won't let my students pose shirtless, but you've posed nude before, so you're a hypocrite.
That's so weird. So weird.
Hey, apples and oranges. Absolutely. She posed nude as an adult for Penthouse magazine, mm-hmm. not as a minor for a school-sanctioned thing.
Fundraiser, yeah.
And secondly, when has Sue ever cared that she was a hypocrite? Like, the plot is treated like, checkmate, Sue, you can't do anything.
Gotcha.
And Sue's reaction is even like, aw, man. Swiping.
Literally, it totally but was.
But truly, Sue's always a hypocrite, fully knows she's a hypocrite, doesn't care. This wouldn't have stopped her.
I know. Really weird. And honestly, like, it didn't make sense to me in it, because I was like, why do we? I know that she doesn't want this to be happening at the school. And she's like, I don't know. It was just stupid. Like, she cannot want, because it's so different. Like, these are minors. These are children. So stupid.
It just felt like
this plot was boring.
It just felt like they were trying to use Jane Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's all it felt like. Yeah. It has no effect on the episode as a whole. It lifts right out.
Absolutely. Then we have the arty stuff in this plot line as well. How'd you feel about the arty stuff?
I thought it was fine. I am realizing now I didn't take a single note on it. I think it's good, though. Frankly, having been a teen boy, it is true that teen boys are so hyper-masculine, mostly because they're all cripplingly self-conscious and they're trying to prove to each other that they're not. And so I had so many friends who were shirtless, constantly doing the crap that these boys do in this episode. Mm-hmm. Just like always shirtless and always being like, oh, look at, like, and frankly, the Jake and Ryder comparing muscle things, like that crap would happen.
Yeah.
And I was always the arty of the group that I was like, literally, this shirt comes off when I'm dead. Like, I am not. That ain't happening.
Yeah, totally.
So that representation is nice of the person who's like, cool, proud of you guys for being so comfortable in your bodies and wanting to show them off. I do not feel the same way. Mm-hmm. And for the episode to not be like, well, Artie should learn to love his body and show it off. It is like Artie should learn to love his body, like he shouldn't be ashamed of his body. But if he is uncomfortable with this, he shouldn't have to, you know, be shirtless on camera.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think that's something that I do like about this episode is it's like the varying degrees of you being comfortable being vulnerable in a situation is okay. And it's okay to, you know, not want to show your body now and want to do it later, or just, you know, you can make that decision. And I like the conversation that Finn and Artie have in the library where he's like, seriously, like, I really don't want to do it. I don't want to be forced into doing this. Like, I have, you know, struggles with my body. He calls his body broken, which, you know, I didn't love hearing specifically because, like, I don't know that Ryan Murphy, you know, is saying that with care. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think he's just, you know, saying that. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was a way for, you know, Artie to feel uncomfortable with his body and not say something like that, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
But I do think that that conversation was really important. And I think Finn's conversation, like, Finn's answer to it was, like, super awesome, where he was like, I am not going to make you do anything you don't want to do. And frankly, it was really brave of you to own up and to be naked emotionally and tell me, and that's okay. And you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And I really liked that.
I mean, frankly, when this idea for fundraiser came up, it should have been volunteer only. Artie should not have been put in a position where he had to say, I'm not comfortable.
Exactly. Totally.
But, you know, Finn is 19 and it's been established on the show that he's not the sharpest tool in the shed. So, well.
And, like, you know, everyone was very excited about it. And I'm sure, like, it felt like even still, like, they were being strong-armed into it. And with Sam, you know, pressuring everyone to, like, do broga. You know, it's a whole thing. But I really appreciate that conversation. And tying it back with the Sam stuff, I like Sam being like, you know what, if you want to be in the in the calendar, you definitely can. I'm not going to force you to wear anything. You can wear whatever you want to wear, and I'll be wearing clothes as well. You know, I liked that, and I thought the resolution to that was good. Like, I liked that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Men of McKinley calendar.
Yes! Let's do it. So funny.
What is just, what image comes to your mind first? What do you think of Men of McKinley calendar?
The image that comes to my mind first is probably the leprechaun one.
Why did they give it Artie all these props?
So funny. So yes. Funny.
This, I guess they all, okay, I'm looking at the pictures now. They all have props in hindsight.
Yeah.
I just instantly think of Kevin McHale holding this massive pot of gold, or Kevin McHale dressed as a pilgrim holding turkey.
I love that one. Every time, because we've posted a couple of these photos on their corresponding holidays, every single time without fail, someone mentions, and I love this about it, someone mentions the Build-A-Bear font. And notice that until they mentioned it, because it is absolutely, without a doubt, the Build-A-Bear font.
Yeah,
it makes
the
me
name
laugh.
Of the months are all in the Build-A-Bear font.
It makes me laugh. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Truly.
So funny.
This is bravery posing for these pictures.
I know.
I think every man on this show is objectively attractive.
Yeah. God, absolutely.
I'm not saying like embarrassing they pose for these photos because they look bad, but just like this is bravery.
They're camp. Like,
shoot.
They're so funny. I think it's funny. I do like hearing that Darren feels uncomfortable about these photos makes me feel a lot worse about it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, that is so fucking offensive, like, to have someone, like, Photoshop your pictures without your permission, first of all. And, like, you know, I think the body standard in general is, like, that doesn't make it right or wrong. You know, your body mm-hmm. can look the whatever way your body looks. Like, that doesn't say anything about your character or, like, anything about your body being good or bad. Like, that's so effed up. And to have this episode that's all about, like, you know, embrace your body. Your body's beautiful. And then, like, them go around and add abs where they aren't. Like, just don't. That's so stupid. That makes me upset.
Yeah. Hey. All right.
Should we talk about the songs in this
yes.
plot before we move on?
Yeah.
We have Centerfold/Hot in here.
Mm-hmm.
I think this number is so fun.
I love this number.
I like, you know me, I love when the Cheerios get in the mix. And I think these two songs mixed together are so stupid fun. I love it.
Yeah, this number is very, very campy. It's, mm-hmm. I have a great time with it. It's also a very good kiddie feature.
Totally, just, absolutely.
Weird that Britney was not in this number. I was about to say it's nice to have a Cheerio character who is a trained dancer. And then I was like, freaking Heather Morris is like the most trained dancer. I don't know mm-hmm. why she's not in this number, but it is very, I don't know. This whole number is just a very good time.
Yeah.
I love
like this number.
Them all getting spray tans from the Cheerios. And then when they're
so
like,
so funny. Yeah.
When they're lifting Kitty, like she's a barbell is very mm-hmm. fun.
Mm-hmm. I think good it's times. So cute. I especially love the spray tan bit. I think that part is so funny. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, like, so music video to me. And then, like, when Kitty, like, goes across the screen with the spray tan gun, I just think it's so funny. I really love that part.
Yeah.
What else happened in this plot?
And then the last number is This Is the New Year.
Oh, This Is the New Year. It was cute.
Finn, hear me out. Mr. Shu can stay in Washington. Finn knows how to give solos to a glee club.
Totally. I'm like, we haven't heard a word from Unique this entire episode, but she gets a solo. People are getting solos. Everyone's getting their little feature in this music video. I loved it.
Which that is something to talk about. Yeah. Unique has not really done anything since Glee's. And I understand there's a lot of characters in the show. So, like, you know, everyone's going to have a few episodes where they're in the background.
Absolutely. The nature of an ensemble show is that it takes time. Yeah.
But it's not like this is, you know, Vanessa Lenges who is always jet-setting somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, Alex Newell probably had to miss a few for that movie, but overall, Alex has been on set and they just don't give Unique anything to do.
I know. Which sucks so bad because, I mean, we've talked about this. Like, Unique was in Vocal Adrenaline and was the mm-hmm. star of Vocal Adrenaline. Vocal Adrenaline, like, the winner of every national show choir competition ever, and has won, like, and is nationally acclaimed as, like, the VIP, you know, show choir person. And it doesn't make any sense to bring this person into the club and ignore them, you know, and, like, in the songs and in the plots, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I would love to see Unique do more.
This is something that happens a lot with Glee characters, like Glee characters that are representing underrepresented communities besides mm-hmm. like the cisgendered white gay characters, mm-hmm. male gay characters, yeah. because they get to be fully fleshed out, is they get reduced to whatever one aspect thing. Of themselves Absolutely. Is that community. So totally. Unique only gets plot lines about being trans, and wonderful that we have this character that can have plot lines about being trans. But she also has a full personality outside of that. That is one thing about her. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the writers are like, well, God, there's nothing about Unique being trans in these plot lines. So we just will keep her in the back until we come up with another plot about that. But, you know, how about her friendships with other people or her personality or her interests or any of that stuff? And then a lot of these characters, like Tina, just now is getting a plot line that isn't about her being Asian. And mm-hmm. Artie has some, but Artie's plot lines about 90% of the time are about the fact that he's in a wheelchair. Like mm-hmm. these writers just consistently, they're so proud of themselves for representing these communities, and it's good that they're on this show, but they reduce them to that one identifier and refuse to like dig into the rest of their personality. So yeah, I feel like Unique has just kind of been subjected to the back of the choir room until they can find another plot line about her being trans. And until then, they're not really interested in fleshing out any other aspect of who she is.
Completely. Great thought. Thank you for bringing that up. Because I think that's, you're absolutely right. Like, the reason we are not seeing Unique in this is because the writers don't have a plot about transness in this mm-hmm. episode. And that's why. Which, you know, that's an amazing part of her and a part of her that we should talk about and celebrate and learn about. But God, like, what's she doing? Who's she hanging out with? I want to know. Yeah, absolutely.
But back to This Is the New Year specifically.
Yes.
We get to hear from near everyone in this club, and it's a great time. Shout out to you, Finn Hudson. Thank you.
Finn Hudson is actually also, hear me out, I think a very good show choir director in the sense of the choreography is very good. Mm-hmm. Like, these songs are all great. Like, everyone is featured very well. I think Will Schuster can get lost.
I think so too.
That's just my opinion.
Will, he was giving it all to Rachel, and then Rachel left, and he said, shoot, I guess I'll give it all to Blaine and sometimes all to Marley, and that's it.
Yeah.
And Finn came in, and he said, what if, you know, we have 12 very talented people, they all sang something. Revolutionary.
Whoa, so crazy, so cool. I love it. And I think this song is super exciting. And I was like, oh my God, I don't think I knew about a lot of like New Year's songs other than New Year's Day by Taylor Swift. And so I was like, I'm gonna put this in my brain head, and I'm gonna file this away for my next New Year's Eve party if I ever throw one.
Heck yeah.
I thought it was sweet. That's that plot. Do you have any more thoughts?
I have some parting thoughts, mostly things I found funny. After Andrea quits the news station because they're not getting, they won't report on real news, Rod Remington's next news segment is a Fort Wayne squirrel who's also a doctor.
You love Rod Remington.
He's the Rod Remington and Andrea are like some of my favorite recurring bits in this show. I think they're so funny.
They're so funny. I love that you love them.
See, you're the target audience for like the Jarly teen romance.
Yeah.
I am the target audience for the male newscaster who thinks that he is like hot even though he's on the local news. And his female partner who literally is like, I cannot believe that I have a degree in this and I'm reporting about show choir drama. I think that literally says so funny.
Everything you need to know about the difference between Ian and I is I spend all my time reading romance novels and Ian loves the news. No. I'm kidding. That is so funny. Love you, Rod Remington.
When Finn is talking about regionals and he mentions that it's in Indianapolis this year, mm-hmm. and Artie says, oh, it's the Paris of Indiana.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Figgins addressing Sam and Brittany as sexy teen imbeciles.
I know. I expect to only be referred to as a sexy teen imbecile for the rest of my life. I am
getting it tattooed.
Fully 25, but I want that. Thank
but
you.
I'm a sexy teen imbecile at heart, and that's what matters.
Yeah, I'm a sexy 25 imbecile in body, but at heart, teen.
And then as much as this Sue plot is really absolutely nothing, these two lines are incredible. First off, when Sue is telling Finn that he is bringing pornography in the school and disrespecting all of the other teachers. And she says, you have besmirched the dignity of such everyday heroes as this woman with Crohn's disease, whose name I do not know.
So, yeah, totally.
And then when Finn replies by saying, Sue Sylvester, you can suck a hot one because you are a hypocrite.
Sucking a hot one, that is so funny.
That crap is good.
Dang. You can tell Ian Brennan got his paws onto that.
Yeah, he did. And finally, once again,
suck a hot one.
This is now what, like, the fifth or sixth time that Amber Riley has been brought onto the show and does nothing.
I know, but she cashed her check. And you know what? I'm happy for her.
Good for her, but I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way.
Absolutely.
That we have had so many alumni come back and Puck has been getting full plot lines.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Santana, not as much as Puck, but Santana's gotten like something of a plot line. And Finn has this big plot line and Kurt has this big plot line and Rachel has this big plot line and even freaking, which like, I'm not going to pretend they're treating Diana Agron well by any means, but like she's not even in the main cast anymore and they've done stuff with her the two times she comes back.
Totally.
And Amber Riley consistently has come back to just comment on another character and leave. And they bring
Absolutely.
Her back to say one sentence about Sam on his video and that's it.
She sings hand drive and it's done. Yep.
It is just so reflective of the just like how ignored she has always been on this show, that she is so phenomenally talented. And the writers even now are like, we don't know what to freaking do with you.
Yeah.
Shoot. I don't know.
Which I think, you know, the structure of this show doesn't work anymore mm-hmm. point blank. Like, we cannot go to New York and to Lima and then, you know, have these characters only come in every once in a while. Like, why aren't we going to California? Why aren't we, like, sending Mercedes to New York? Why aren't we doing X, Y, or Z? Like, it doesn't make any sense anymore. And I don't know why they are, like, holding on to all of these characters. And mm-hmm. why didn't they just, like, graduate them and get a new cast in
here? Seriously, just set them free.
God, set them free. And it's also like, they absolutely, hold the fuck on. They film in California. They absolutely could afford to like go do something in California for Mercedes. They're just so dumb.
I mean, they've already done it twice with Puck. We've had two different episodes where Puck was in LA for a few scenes.
Yeah, stupid.
Because, you know, all the fans were clamoring to see more of Puck.
Yes.
They said,
oh,
Mercedes, who's she? I want more Noah Puckerman.
I know. And I don't understand. I don't understand. I think it's the writers, you know, ignoring Amber Riley, certainly. But, you know, I don't know. I can't even put my finger on it. I want to say it's, I don't know. It's stupid.
No, I agree that this show cannot balance all these characters. I think it was a terrible idea to keep him on board. But it is noticeable that with some of them, they really try, and I don't think it works, but they really try. And with Mercedes, they have never once tried.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, do you have any more thoughts on McKinley?
I don't.
Well, bye, McKinley. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to hop on a plane and see what's going on in New York. All right, let's get to New York and Rachel. So, just an overview of this plot line. Rachel has been cast in a film by a NIADA student that's like super artsy. It's about an old woman with Alzheimer's, but it's an allegory for the end of the world. And there's a scene where Rachel has to be topless. Rachel tells the director that she's comfortable with it, but then ends up flip-flopping the whole episode about whether she actually is comfortable with it or not.
She's torn
by Edna. What the heck was their name?
Edna Sway.
Edna Swap. Sway. Edna Swap. By Edna Swap. And then she ends up having a heart to heart with Santana and Quinn and tells the director, "I'm sorry, I don't feel comfortable with this. I don't feel ready to be topless on camera," and quits the project.
Yeah.
What were your overall thoughts on this plot line?
Overall thoughts. I like this plot line. I like this plot line a lot. And I think, they were always pretty careful to be like, there's nothing wrong with being naked on camera. There's nothing wrong with being topless on camera. And I think in order to do a plot line like this, you also have to, say that. Because it's true. There is nothing wrong with it. Lea Michele herself, topless on the Broadway.
That's
and,
true.
You know, and that's absolutely absolutely all right. And it should be up to your discretion. And I think what I took away from this is it's up to you. Don't let people pressure you into it. Don't let people make you feel like shit about it if you want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do find that that's what I'm getting from it. I don't know. I think they're also I don't know. I like it, though. I think the overall message of it, I like, Do you know what I mean?
What were your other things?
I was going to say, when bringing in Santana and Quinn to be like, we've got to talk you out of this. This is a terrible idea. And maybe it is a terrible idea to Rachel, but that's Rachel's choice. You know what I mean? So I didn't love that they were there for that. But also, I love that they were in the episode. Do you know what I mean?
As Santana says, they're also there for shopping.
Yeah. They're also there for shopping.
I do love that. I love that line where Rachel's like, you guys came all the way here just to talk to me because Kirk called you. And Santana goes, we're also here to shop.
Yeah. don't get it twisted. I love that. And I, and all of that, I love that they're there. But oh my God. Let's talk about the 2-2-2 rule. I was like, what a cool way to decipher your feelings about something. I think that's a good way to decipher your feelings about things. It's like, is it going to matter in 2 years? Is it going to matter in 2 months? You know what I mean? What are you going to feel in 2 months? What are you going to feel in 2 years? I think that's I thought that was cool. I was like, I'm going to put that in my head and use it in another time when I have to make a decision. So I thought that was fun. Overarching thoughts about this, though. Overall, I like it. Oh, my God. I'm rambling about nothing. What did you think?
This is my favorite plot of the episode. The Meta McKinley stuff, I think, is genuinely fun. And there's stuff I like. Yeah. But the reason I like this episode is which is shocking because I usually am forward through this New York crap.
Totally.
I love this plot line.
Yeah, totally.
I think that, much like sex positivity, body positivity, first let's clarify one thing, is a very good thing. Sex positivity and body positivity are both very good things. I think there is sometimes an unhealthy tendency to, because the whole of society is so restrictive on sex and so restrictive on what you can do with your body, that people then swing too far the other way, where it's well, if you aren't having sex, like, now that's bad. Yeah. Or if mm-hmm. you aren't comfortable showing other people your body, now that's bad. Yeah. And I love that this plotline makes it a point where it's like, we're not saying that doing a nude scene is bad. Like, Rachel, even her last line when she quits, she says, I don't think it's bad for actresses to be naked on camera. I just don't think I'm ready for that.
Yeah.
That it's like, we're not saying that, like, how dare, you know, women be topless on camera. They should be covering themselves up. But we are saying that your body is your own and you should not be A, pressured into, you know, not going topless on camera because, like, society doesn't want you to, but B, mm-hmm. also not be, like, gaslit into thinking the fact that you aren't ready to share your body means that you are somehow, like, regressive in what's wrong with the world.
Totally. I completely agree. And I think that's something that I really like about this plot is she goes, it's not my path right now. It's not what I want to do right now. And if I want to do it later, that's fine. And I like too where she was like, I wasn't lying to you when I said I was ready, but I'm not ready now. Because you're allowed mm-hmm. to change your mind about that as well. And I think you're so right. Like, the nuances of, you know, sex positivity and body positivity are vast. And you can make that choice for yourself. If you're not ready to have sex, don't have sex. If you're not ready to show your body, don't show your body. That's okay. That's yours. So I really like that about this plot.
And I think the writing does a good job, A, just from a comedic standpoint, but mm-hmm. B, from a storytelling standpoint, of showing that, like, this movie's bad. Like, this yeah, film totally. Is a bad film. So mm-hmm. it's not, Rachel is not getting topless for this film because she actually believes in the project. Mm-hmm. She would be getting topless because she's feeling pressured into doing it.
Yes,
and it's just
absolutely.
Like every glimpse we get into the director and what she talks about the project is always just so funny how like bonkers mm-hmm. and bananas the film is and how stupid it is. Mm-hmm. And then I love the conversation that Rachel has with Santana and Quinn when she is saying, like, well, you know, a lot of serious actors get naked on camera. And Santana says, yeah, for, like, films they believe in, not for some crappy mm-hmm. student piece that's yeah. probably about an old woman with Alzheimer's, which is exactly what
so
it's about.
So funny. And I love, too, that they also mentioned that, like, this is not a safe space for Rachel. Like, mm-hmm. Rachel doesn't feel safe in this space. And, like, you know, the director is making her feel uncomfortable and making her feel shitty about not being ready. And don't feel pressured into, like, especially revealing parts of yourself that you don't want to in a space that doesn't make you feel like the most comfortable and safe, you know, way you can. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I appreciated that as well. God. This and that movie looks shitty.
I love the director character. I think she's so
funny.
And then every time that it would get to the point where Rachel had to drop her robe and Rachel would be like, I'm sorry, I can't do this cut. And the director would say, don't call cut, only I call cut. Cut.
Yeah. Like, you can tell she's a senior and she like just got like the opportunity, like she's, you know, she's been wanting to say cut for so long and she's like mm-hmm. not going to let anyone take it away from her. But then I loved in the end, she's like, I guess I have to be grandmother. And it's like, bitch, you knew you wanted
like,
to be grandmother.
This is your plan all along.
I know. That's why you cast Rachel. So funny. So yeah, I really like that.
It certainly is something to address that, you know, Kurt does come off like pretty shamey towards Rachel mm-hmm. that she would consider being topless in this movie and all of that stuff. And then, like you said, that he essentially tries to tell her like what he thinks she should do. Mm-hmm. And then when she doesn't listen, he just gets more people from her past
yeah, totally.
To tell her that she shouldn't do it. And I, you know, I 100% think that this should be Rachel's choice and, you know, her friend shouldn't be making that choice for her. But also, before we ever get to Kurt, before we ever hear Kurt's opinion on it, we already have Rachel singing Torn. So yes. We've already established that without any voices from anyone in her life, Rachel is not very confident in this decision and is very on the fence about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's a whole thing to address about her friends, but I also think we are supposed to believe that Kurt can tell that Rachel isn't confident about it, and she's really only doing it to, you know, impress this upperclassman director and impress her upperclassman boyfriend.
Yes. And with that, I think I really enjoyed that scene with Kurt because, you know, obviously that reflects on Kurt's character. Anything that you make your character do, they kind of have to, you made that bed, you have to lie in it. But it also comes with Brody being the opposite in that scene where Kurt is absolutely against it. And he is like, there's no way you can do that. There's no way you'll have respect, blah, 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 blah. And then Brody on the opposite end being like, there is no way you can't do that. As artists, we need to be able to do this. As an artist, you cannot be an artist without like being naked, you know? And I love that the answer for Rachel is more in the middle, you know, where it's like not this and it's not that. You have these like the angel and the devil on your shoulder, respectively, whatever, you know, I'm not saying one is right, one is wrong. Absolutely not. But you have these two voices in her head being like, this is absolutely right and this is absolutely wrong. And Rachel comes to her own conclusion that is like, it's not right for me now and that's okay. You know what I mean? So I loved that. Also, fuck you, Brody, for walking around naked in this apartment. If my roommate's like partner ever did that, I'd be like, I guess I don't live with you anymore. It is so fucking disrespectful.
The way that Rachel and Brody try to gaslight Kurt into thinking
they're like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, that he has hangups because he's not okay with his friend's boyfriend walking around naked and sitting on his furniture that he paid for naked.
So terrible.
Brody is my arch nemesis. I would be furious.
I know, he sucks so bad. And he's like, I'm just showing Rachel it's okay. And it's like, Lee, you just moved in like a day ago. Did Kurt even like sign off on this? Seriously, you are such an asshole.
Maybe you should have taken this up with her roommate who has lived here longer than you and also found this apartment.
Yeah.
Oh my asshole. Gosh.
Brody sucks. Brody Terrible. Sucks so bad.
Ugh. All right. Let's talk about.
Should we talk about Torn? Yes. Oh my God. Literally, old Rachel can't come to the phone right now when she is like, when they're like, it is like the show read my damn mind where I was like, I miss old Rachel. And then literally confronting us with old Rachel versus this new sexy Raquel. I love this. It is everything to me.
I am obsessed with this narrative device. And Kurt has a line later where he says, how is it that a year ago you were a girl wearing reindeer sweaters and wondering if Finn liked you and you've gone to starring in pornos? And that line really does illustrate how ridiculous it is that this character change happened in 1 year, that like we're led to believe that Rachel has changed this much in one semester of college. Yeah. But I love the narrative device of, you change so much from who you were in high school as you like enter adulthood and you go through your 20s. And, you know, people always ask, like, when you're feeling down on yourself, they're like, but what would young you say if they could see you now? And I think that is, you know, helpful in a lot of ways, that a lot of people, you know, we're out living our dreams or pursuing our dreams, and young us would find that so exciting and yada, yada, yada. But I also feel like a thing that people don't talk about a lot is like, there's some stuff in my life that young me would be horrified if he saw.
Yeah.
Be like, oh my God, what's this about? And I love this narrative device of Rachel being confronted by season one Rachel and season one Rachel being like, what the heck are you doing? Yeah. And her line where she tells young Rachel, tells modern day Rachel, you're not a porn star, even though your hair and makeup makes you look like one.
Yes. So funny. And I just like putting these two Rachels next to each other is hilarious. Like, and even the way that old Rachel talks, like where she's like, my favorite line in this whole damn episode is Rachel says something, modern day Rachel says something and she's like, oh, we need to sing about it. Thank God. Like, and I just, oh my God, I love Rachel. And you know, Rachel, she's gone through a lot. She's gone through a lot. And I love her. And I love this scene so much. And I feel like, maybe even in the, like, in the, what were you saying earlier about, what's that word? They had a hiatus. And they realized, like, you know, where'd the old Rachel go? Where'd the old Rachel go? Shoving it in our face, being like, it's right here. And would Rachel like this? I don't know. But it's the arc that we're on. I liked it. It was sweet, and that song is so damn good, and I loved it. Was just like so beautifully shot and cheesy, like the spinning around and like, you know, passing by all of the classmates and like switching Rachel's. So fun. Obsessed.
You know, you got emotional at people from Sam's past telling him what he has to offer. I got emotional watching season one Rachel duet with season four Rachel.
Yeah, I love that.
Season one Rachel is my favorite character who's ever been on the show. I love her so much. And beyond that, just this idea of who you were when you were younger and like what you can learn from that person. What like you want to take away from who you were when you were younger that like you wish you still had, and then be the stuff from when you're younger that you're like, I should probably unlearn that. Like, you know what? I've grown and changed in these ways and that's actually good. And it's just so powerful to have Rachel literally confronting her past self and seeing stuff about her past self that she kind of lost sight of and wants to regain. And then also seeing stuff about her past self that she's like, wow, this girl is judgmental and annoying. And like, totally. I should not be that way.
Totally.
There's also the shot of season one Rachel wearing pajamas and singing into a microphone, staring in the mirror. Lovely shout out, throwback to Showmance. Obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I miss season one Rachel so much. Bring her back.
And then it juxtaposed with her brushing her hair. Oh my God. Obsessed. I love that song.
Yeah, incredible. Well.
Yeah. What else happens?
We got Quinn and Santana.
Oh my God. Quinn and Santana, vampires showing up to,
A real shout out to our Patreon exclusive episode about Glee fanfiction.
My favorite. Ian read a fanfiction about Brittany and Quinn being vampires and then turning Santana and Rachel into vampires.
And becoming a vampire foursome.
Loves it. That's what happens in this episode. I gasped so loud when I saw these two. I was so excited to see them. And I love song. Oh my gosh. I love this arrangement of it. It is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is so cute. I'm just so excited to see them. I love them. What did you think?
I love it. It's so forced. Like, why on earth would they come here? But yeah, I don't care. It's so good to see them again.
I know.
And I don't know. I fully get the concern about Rachel's friends shoving their opinions down her throat. But I also just like Santana says, it's for a crappy student film.
Yeah.
I do like the idea that these two girls who had such a roller coaster relationship with Rachel in high school do genuinely care about her and don't want her to do something that they believe she's going to regret.
Yeah.
And so they're like looking out for her and trying to make sure. And they don't ever, you know, they do make their opinion known, but they never say like, and so you definitively should do this. But they're just kind of like, hey, you should maybe think outside of just this one moment how you will feel about this in the future. Are you glad that you did it or do you think you're going to regret it? And then, yeah, this cover of Love Song. Incredible.
Amazing. Yeah, so good. Absolutely. I agree. And yeah, I don't know. I think this plot is cool because like everyone's kind of like, you know, talking about their opinions at Rachel. And I do think I like Quinn and Santana coming in, just talking this out loud. And Santana, who's had an experience with something like this, and Quinn, who, you know, I think, you know, understands Rachel on a different level than other people because they're in love, you know, and like talking about it with people who get it, you know, like mm-hmm. Brody and Kurt maybe don't get it like these two do. You know what I mean?
Well, and especially Quinn and Santana, who have been so heavily sexualized in their lives.
Oh my God, absolutely. Like, because,
you know, you got Rachel, who in high school, all she wanted was for people to find her sexy. Like, the mm-hmm. whole plot of Bad Reputation was Rachel trying so hard to get people at her school to find her sexy. Yeah. Whereas it's Quinn and Santana, who have always been viewed as sexy, and they're like, hey, we know that you're now hot Rachel, and this is, like, what you've always dreamed of. But here's the bad side of this that you're not aware of. And totally. We want to make sure that you like reconcile that, or like you come to terms with that before you go make this big decision.
Totally. Absolutely. I think that's a great thought. Love that. Dang.
And then we got some heavy handed foreshadowing, really just smacked
honestly,
us across the face.
I was like, what an Easter egg. Super fun. Exciting. With
Santana being like, you know, I'm not in a hurry to get back to Kentucky. I feel like New York's more my speed. And then she looked straight at the camera and then she winked and then she put her finger to her lips mm-hmm. and went, shh.
She went, we'll see.
She said, I don't know. Stay tuned. Anything could happen.
She's like, y'all looking for a roommate?
Y'all yeah, looking to cut that. To kick out that weird adult man who's always naked and hanging around two teenagers?
I am.
Well,
all right.
Is that it? Is that naked?
I think that's it.
Shoot.
You know, hell yeah.
Lena, what's your best part of naked?
Well, what is my best number? God, hear me out. I love all the numbers in this episode. There mm-hmm. is really not a number that I don't just super enjoy. But I'm going to say, God, what is my favorite number? I'm going to say torn. Sorry. But with the caveat of, with my gentleman's tip of the hat too, the songs in this episode are so good. And I think my best part is, and I do, there are parts of this episode, gosh, which parts of this episode is my favorite? Maybe Sam, when he saw like the video of all his friends just like shouting him out. Just so sweet. Mm-hmm. I loved that. So probably that. What's your best part?
My best number is also torn. I'm sorry. It's the return of season one, Rachel.
I know.
But if I had to choose another, it'd be Love Song. And here's what's interesting is, as a song, I prefer this cover of Love Song. This cover is on my like Glee playlist, which is frankly not very long. I just really think it's beautiful. I think the harmonies mm-hmm. are so wonderful. I will never in my life listen to this cover of Torn. I don't care. I'll just listen to the original.
Yeah.
But Torn is just so special because of the context of the episode and like seeing season one Rachel. But as a standalone song divorced from the episode, I think Love Song's the best one.
Yeah.
Remember, my best part is I just like the message of you are the master of your body. Mm-hmm. And so no one can tell you what you should or shouldn't do with it. You should, you know, make those decisions for yourself and not just
absolutely.
Do it to appease someone else.
Totally. I love that. I agree.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Great.
All right. There's no assignment of the week, but if you were in a People of McKinley calendar, what month would you represent?
Oh, God, that's such a great question because I was obviously, everyone knows this about me, born in September. But I love Halloween. But I love April. I'm going to say October. What about you?
So I've actually done one of these calendars before, but it wasn't. Yes. So,
oh my God. I would kill to see it. Do you have it?
You can. It wasn't when I was in high school. I'm going to tell you what this is, and you're going to realize that you were around for when this happened, and it's much less exciting than you think.
I remember immediately.
Yeah, so it was a student-run theater company at our college that I was marketing director for, and we were trying to raise money. And so I was like, what if we do like a joke sexy calendar mm-hmm. with all of the members of the board? So like our artistic director and our marketing team, obviously, and our technical people and all that stuff. And we were not going to undress for any of them. It was going to be like very stupid, pretend sexy. And everyone was like, let's do it. And I organized the whole thing. And I took all the pictures of everyone, and it tanked so hard.
No.
We raised almost no money. It did not work out. But in that calendar, I was March. And I like posed. As I said, everyone was
Why
fully
March?
Clothed. I think I asked everyone else what months they wanted, and then I just took whatever was left over.
A humble king.
But I'm in an all green suit laying on my side with a pot of gold over my crotch.
So good.
Party time. Party time.
Party time. I've never done anything like this, but I would not pick March. I would pick October. Write you a love song.
Well,
today.
That's Naked.
H, yeah.
Starring, featuring Mae Muller and Polo G.
That's Naked, sung by the Spice Girls.
Yes. If you have thoughts on the Spice Girls, send them to us, recoveringgleek@gmail.com.
Would you please? Not have Spice Girls on this Glee podcast.
If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter @recoveringgleek, on Instagram and TikTok @recoveringgleek_podcast. We would love it if you enjoy listening to this podcast. If you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, help spread the word, help get more people listening. And if you really love this podcast and you just got a chunk of change burning a hole in your pocket, we'd love it if you supported our Patreon. Patreon.com/recoveringgleek. If you subscribe to our Patreon, it helps us continue making this podcast. It helps us make more content. And as a patron, you get access to video recordings of the podcast. You get access to monthly bonus episodes like our fan fiction one. And if you join our higher tier, you get bi-weekly vlogs, as in every other week. And you get a shout out at the end of our episode.
Here we go. It's time for the special Patreon. Thank you. Here's Blam, it's Ham, Kaden, Katie, Fanson, Nadia, Savannah, Fadia, Meadow, Nicole, Allie, Jackson, Tori, Gally, Golly. I'm so sorry if I'm saying your name wrong. Please let me know if I said it wrong. Caitlin, Garbage, Maddie, Abigail, Kodiak, Kirsten, Kristen, Ani, Story, Natasha, Liz, Eileen, Mariah, Manuel, Mallory, Sarah, Hannah, Matilda, Rebecca, Livy, Eve, Jordan, Andrew, Elizabeth, Christina, Dell, Sarah, Ari, Liam, Riley, Juliana, Stephanie, Haley, Raphael, Marissa, Rin, Taylor, Kimberly, we're turning the page, Carlin, Frankie, Dana, Chase, Finley, Jocelyn, Margaret, Despina, Liz, Sarah, Josie, Nash, Aaron, Alana, and Marin, and Hannah, and Phoebe, Kaylee, Caitlin, Megan, Emily, Aria, Jeremy, Beatrice, Eva, Haley, Emily, Anaya, Michelle, Lauren, Audrey, Marcus, Lisa, Fors, Jacqueline, Spencer, Elise, Troy, Mallory, Meredith, Phoebe, Hannah, Laura, Ray, Emily, Alyssa, Charlie, Lily, Melanie, Yanula, we turn the page, Samantha, Sam, Jennifer, Aubrey, Stephanie, Kat, shoot, Kelsey, Haley, Tiffany, Emily, Leah, Kelsey, Isabel, Amira, Thomas, Chucho, Cyrus, Brittany, Victoria, Alaya, it's Aaliyah, not Alaya. I know how to say it right, Naomi, Haley, Robbie, Andy, Kenzie, Rhiannon, Ashley, Roman, and Tara, Michael, Andre, Katie, Will, Elizabeth, Freddie, Sinead, Emma, Turtle, and Allison! Every week we get more, and I'm going to say them.
Heck yeah.
Thank you so much for being our patrons. We love you so much. Thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate you listening. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this. Definitely, you know, a conversation that, Gianna, definitely I'd love to have with you. Thanks for listening. Here is a kiss on your forehead on your way out, consensually, of course.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review and tell your friends, please.
I saw Darren Criss last night.
Mm-hmm.
I walked past him on the street and I am a respectful human, so I did not say a word.
He's got like a baby and stuff. He just got
out of a show and he was like,
I'm not mad at you.
She is literally like making, like running her finger across her throat, like flipping me off right now.
I'm so sorry. Mad at you for not talking to Darren Criss.
I was trying to be respectful of him. I literally work across the street from this man. Have never run into him. The night that I run into him is not a night that I'm working. It's a night I have off and just happen to be walking down 50th Street.
Yeah.
Wild. Maybe I'll just start wearing our merch.
Yes.
Because then it invites him to speak to me.
Uh-huh. Perfect.